time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitt Madness.
And here he goes, defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Your host, Dajon Hughes.
Good morning on this Saturday morning. Welcome into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dajon Hughes, and I'm excited to dive into an hour's worth of Michigan sports for you. There's a ton happening inside of the Mid and a few things outside of it that we'll have to get into. We'll talk about the Tigers as always, get in on the Pistons as they did make a move, and the rest of the NBA offseason, some Michigan basketball updates, World Cup, and maybe even a little talk about Dylan Larkin if we're able to get there with the time we have allotted. And of course, we'll end out with our picks because I need some redemption after the week that I had. We'll get into all of that later on in the show. I am looking forward to this weekend. I'm out coaching my last lacrosse tournament of the summer this weekend, so I'm really pumped about that. Going to try and win a tourney with these boys. They've played fantastic this summer, so it's going to be fun to hang out with them one last time before we pack it up. Also going to take a little mini trip over to Chicago and take in some professional lacrosse this weekend as well. So a busy weekend for me, and a lot of lacrosse to take in. Also, obviously, family, fun, friends, sports, all the in-betweens that are always in a weekend. So I hope that your weekend is off to is just as good of a start as mine was, and it's going to continue to get better. And hopefully you like the news that I'm going to share with you. But of course, we'll be starting with our Tigers, where we always start in the standings. They are still second from the bottom in the Central, but they are climbing ever so closer to those Twins. They're only 2.5 games back from the Twins, which makes them only 4.5 games back from the leaders of the division, which are both the White Sox and the Guardians. White Sox 47-45, Guardians 48-46, Twins 46-48, two games back. Tigers 4.5 games back at 43-50, and then the Royals 10 games back at 38-56. When we look at the American League overall, the Tigers are fifth from the bottom, 12 games back from the league-leading Rays. The Baltimore Orioles are 12.5 games back at 43-51. The A's are 41-52, 14 games behind. The Royals, 38-56, 17.5 games behind. And at the bottom, 18.5 games behind. Last place in the American League are the Los Angeles Angels at 37-57. The Yankees sit 4 games behind in second place at 51-42. Then the White Sox and Guardians, both 7.5 games back. And then the Rangers coming in, rounding out the top five at 47-46, 8 games behind the leaders. Overall, the Tigers have climbed up a little bit further from the bottom of the MLB. They're now ninth from the bottom. The Orioles, Reds, Athletics, Mets, Giants, Royals, Rockies are all, and Angels are all below the Tigers. Right above them are the Red Sox, only a game ahead at 43-48. At the top of the entire MLB, it's the Los Angeles Dodgers. Surprise, surprise, 61-33. The Brewers only a game and a half back at 59-34. Then those Rays, the Braves, 54-38, 6 games back. And the Cubs, 52-41, 8.5 games back, rounding out the top five in the MLB. Looking more closely at our Tigers, Riley Green leading the batting average department at a .289, slugging percentage a .464, on-base percentage a .376. Dylan Dingler, he's still hitting dingers. 19 homers for Dylan, a .264 ERA batting average. He's got 60 runs batted in as he leads the RBI category as well. Looking over at the pitching department, Keiter Montero, 3.15, leading the earned average department. He's got 5 wins and 60 strikeouts. Framber Valdez leads the team in wins with 5. He's got 4.10 ERA, 87 strikeouts. And Jack Flaherty at the top of the strikeout board for the Tigers with 92. He's got 2 wins on the year with a 4.60 ERA. Batting for the team as a whole, 395 runs, 20th in the league. Batting average of .236, 24th in the league. On base percentage of .314, still sitting at that pie, 19th in the league. And then slugging percentage of .399 is 15th in the league. So the bats are starting to warm up a little bit more. And then the pitching has continued to be phenomenal for this Tigers team all season long. A 3.66 ERA, which is good for sixth. 36 quality starts is tied for sixth. Their whip, a 1.22, is good for sixth in the league as well. And their opponent batting average, a .234, is seventh in the league. They are top seven in every major pitching statistical category. And that's a big part of the reason why we're about to talk about them being on a five-game winning streak. And they've won eight of their last nine. It's bananas how good the Tigers have been playing in recent games. We go back. They had the tough series against the Houston Astros 2 weeks ago where they lost the first game 2-1, won the second game 8-0, lost 8-6 and 7-5. And then they went on to sweep the Yankees 7-3, 9-3, 6-2, and 11. And then they lost game one against the Rangers 10-4. And then, boom, here we go. Flaherty back on the mound, a 3-0 win. And then we get Mize on the mound for a 6-3 win. Then the A's come into town. Skubal grabs a 6-2 win. Melton grabs a 6-1 win. Valdez grabs a 4-1 win. And they're ending out the first half of the regular season on somewhat of a run. Eight of their last nine is fantastic. If you want to add three more games to that, that's nine of their last 12. They're playing fantastic baseball, but they are running into a team in the Philadelphia Phillies that is quite good. They're on a one-game win streak, which is not as impressive. They did recently lose to the Reds, and they lost the series to the Royals, which is really not good. Then they split with the Pirates right before that. They did beat the Mets and the Nationals, but it's been tough sledding for this team of recent. They are still second in the NL East. They're top six in the entire MLB at 52-42, but the last couple of weeks don't necessarily say that, especially losing a series to the Royals. Very questionable, but looking at the matchups, in my opinion, they're kind of in favor of the Philadelphia Phillies. I mean, you got Jack Flaherty versus Aaron Nola. Then you have Casey Mize going against Christopher Sanchez. And then Tarek Skubal versus Zach Wheeler. These are all great pitching matchups, but I do think Nola has the edge on Flaherty. I do think Christopher Sanchez might have the edge on Casey Mize right now. And the saving grace, I guess, is Skubal pitching against Wheeler, who's also one of the top aces in the game. This is a great matchup. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So you guys already know how the Friday night game went down, which was 6:40 p.m. between Flaherty and Nola. And then you got 6:10 p.m. later today, Mize versus Sanchez. And then the 1:40 p.m. tomorrow, Skubal versus Wheeler. This is going to be a huge, huge series. I mean, imagine them winning three in a row and winning 11 of their last 12. And then, like I said, you back that up, 12 of their last 15. And then that's a sweep against the Philadelphia Phillies, who are sixth in the league. You got to be feeling absolutely fantastic going into the All-Star break, which is, hold on, in Philadelphia. Granted, all three of these games will be at Comerica Park, but still, this is huge momentum going into that All-Star break, feeling like yourselves and, you know, feeling like you can get back into the race, which you are, which you can try and get a wild card spot, but maybe it's just better to put your head down and strive to win the division. Only 4.5 games back, and if you win these three and you get a little bit of help, you ain't really going to be that many games back at the break. I like the position the Tigers are in when you factor in all of the injuries that they have dealt with, both pitching and out in the fielders and batters. It has been a rough go for the Tigers in the first half of the series, and they're still able to find a ton of success and put them in a position to make the playoffs. I mean, they're only 7 games below 500 right now. So if they were to win the next three, that would put them 4 games below 500, and they would only be, like I said, a couple of games behind the leaders in the division. They are in a great space to be dealing with so many injuries throughout the season. They still don't have some of their best players in Javi Baez and Gleyber Torres and many others who have been dealing with injuries. So I really like where the Tigers are going. I'm going to see if we can pull up these all-star rosters if they are out already. But I'm not seeing anything about it at the moment. Oh, here they are. All-star rosters, snubs, other takeaways. Aaron Judge was voted as a starter, but he's going to miss the game due to a rib injury. Mike Trout was voted as a starter. He'll also be on the injured reserves. Mainstay Jose Ramirez, Francisco Lindor, Mookie Betts, Cal Raleigh, Manny Machado, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Trey Turner, Julio Rodriguez, Fernando Tatis Jr., Kyle Tucker, Bo Bichette, Alex Bregman, Gunnar Anderson, and Jose Altuve. Won't get into the pitching injuries, which obviously Scooble, Freed, Hunter Brown are all in there, but Jacob Mizorowski, Christopher Sanchez, Shohei Ohtani, Chase Burns, Chris Sale, all looking to be on the roster. Biggest snub, they're saying, is Bryce Terang, second baseman from the Brewers. Justin Warbolowski, second biggest snub as a starting pitcher from the Dodgers. They selected Max Meyer, Eduardo Rodriguez, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, and Webb, who was a questionable selection with his 5-6 record, 3.66 ERA. American League's biggest snub, Wilson Contreras, the first baseman from the Red Sox, and then Davis Martin, the starting pitcher from the Chicago White Sox. Jacob Latz, Ranger Suarez, Aroldis Chapman, Michael Wacha, Bobby Witt Jr. all made the team. It's going to be interesting. Kevin McConnell voted in as a rookie, so that's going to be amazing to see. Travis Bazzana, Aaron Clement. I'm not sure what this is going to turn out like, but it's going to be in Philadelphia, which is going to make it a lot of fun. That's an amazing ballpark and something you should check out. But that's pretty much all we got for the Tigers. We'll talk about them again next week when we got more to catch up on Mid-Madness. When we come back from the break, we'll be talking Pistons and NBA offseason here on 95.3 The Tip.
Well, Jason, I've got to tell you, you're pretty much everything this company is looking for in an entry-level candidate.
Great.
Your resume isn't quite what we're used to, but you've got a fantastic work ethic.
Thank you.
And I'm impressed by how you carry yourself.
So, should we talk about the job?
What? The job? Oh, sorry. Yeah, I have no way of recruiting or even meeting you. This interview didn't happen.
It may sound ridiculous, and that's because it kind of is. There's a huge pool of talent your company is missing out on. Meet the grads of life. Who are they? Talent worth knowing about. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Man, we really could have used him.
Don't miss out on a resource many innovative companies have already discovered. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
I'm more resourceful than I thought.
My suit can still make an impression.
My video games are still game changers.
And my lamp can bring others a bright future.
Because when I donate my stuff to Goodwill,
it helps fund job placement and training for people right in my community.
Now my stuff gets a second chance.
And will give someone in my community
a second chance too.
Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. That's goodwill.org. This message brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes. We're stepping on the hardwood in Detroit, Little Caesars Arena, talking about the Detroit Pistons and what's happening in the NBA offseason. They made a move recently as the Pistons are trading Caris LeVert and 2 second-round picks to the Milwaukee Bucks for Torian Prince and Gary Harris. Sources told ESPN's Shams Charania, The deal creates a trade exception for Detroit as well as cap savings. All three players involved are on expiring deals. LeVert signed a two-year, $29 million deal with Detroit last season. He appeared in 60 games for the number one seeded Pistons, averaging 7.4 points while shooting 41.7% from the field. In Prince, the Pistons pick up an elite spot-up shooter who has shot above 43% from the three last two seasons. Harris, a 12-year NBA veteran, averaged just under 14 minutes for Milwaukee last season. Gonna see if there's anything else going on with our Pistons before we move on to the rest of the NBA. I wanted to see if they were going to talk a little bit more about the huge team trade that was going on. But here it is. Free agent forward Javonte Green has agreed to a one-year, $3.95 million deal to return to the Detroit Pistons. Sources tell ESPN Green played all 82 games for the Pistons a season ago, averaging 6.9 points, 17.6 minutes, and on 38.1% three-point shooting in the year. So now that we have gone there, we're going to start with one of the bigger stories in free agency, LeBron James. Six teams can offer him according to the market that he's looking for and where he wants to play. We'll start with one of his former teams, the Cavaliers. The next contract of James Harden, who declined his $42.3 million player option, could play a role in whether the Cavaliers have the $3.9 million veterans minimum exception or the $6.1 million tax mid-level. Not including Harden, Cleveland is $25.3 million below the first apron and $38 million under the second. If a team uses more than $6.1 million of the signing exception, it is then hard-capped at the first apron. For Cleveland to open more than $6.1 million, it would need to trade either Max Strus or Dennis Schroeder. Their pitch to LeBron, obviously the Cavs, pitch a final homecoming. He's played 11 seasons and 1,001 regular season and playoff games for the franchise. His first custom sprawling mansion is outside Akron and an easy drive to the practice facility. The roster is appealing, too. It is built out with size with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, ball handling with Harden and Schroeder, scoring with Donovan Mitchell and Harden, and shooting with Sam Merrill and Strus. The Cavs are expensive and ready to win. They're expected to be a serious finals contender, or they face a significant roster overhaul. James will walk into that pressure, but with nothing to prove personally. The Nuggets. The Nuggets are in financial purgatory even after waiving veteran Jonas Valanciunas. They are over the luxury tax first apron and probably will exceed the second apron once their roster is filled out. The Nuggets have a league-high five roster spots available. More importantly, they could be faced with a luxury tax penalty approaching $175 million if restricted free agent Payton Watson is signed to a contract starting at $20 million. Because of their financial woes, Denver has only the 3.9 veterans minimum exception available to offer James. James has always relished playing alongside intelligent players. He often has listed this quality as one of his main desires when building a roster. The Nuggets have one of the smarter players the sports has ever seen in Nikola Jokic, and pairing him with James would be an ideologic delight. Having Aaron Gordon would mean James would be relieved from draining his energy on defending top opponent wing scorers, while Jamal Murray can use with James some of the same pick-and-roll techniques he used to flourish with Jokic. The Nuggets are in regression, failing to return to even the Western Conference Finals in 3 years since their championship run. Despite prime years production from Jokic, they could, in the worst way, use the greatest minimum contract player in NBA history. The Warriors. Barring trading Moses Moody, $12.5 million contract, Golden State has the $3.9 million veterans exception available to offer James. A Moody trade would put the Warriors $38 million below the first apron hard cap. If Draymond Green signed in the $20 million to $22 million range, the Warriors would then have the flexibility to sign players to the veterans minimum and still offer $6 million to LeBron. With Jimmy Butler III out of a big chunk of the season recovering from an ACL tear, the Warriors roster isn't quite comparable to others on this list, but James thrived playing with Stephen Curry in the 24 Olympics, where James won tournament MVP and Curry starred alongside him in the semifinals and gold medal game. Curry spoke Thursday on what the Warriors could offer James. The pitch is, do you want to play good basketball and be around people who know how to play the game? He said, hopefully raise our floor, our competitiveness this year. There's good golf in the Bay. James has a long relationship with the Green, too, and the two of them could work well together at both ends. Butler is promising to return strong from his injury, and the front office is still looking for ways to trade future first-round picks to improve the roster for Curry. Another place he's been before, Miami Heat. The Heat have a minimum of 2 roster spots available and are $10.5 million below the first apron hard cap. If Jane signs for $7 million, Miami would have enough to sign a 14th player and remain under the threshold. James, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Bam Adebayo might represent the most athletic and versatile front court in NBA history. Defensively, Antetokounmpo and Adebayo would shoulder most of the defensive burden, and the fast break options are terrifying to imagine. There are spacing and shooting concerns, and the asset cupboard is bare after the trade to get Antetokounmpo, but trusting Eric Spoelstra, Pat Riley, and Andy Ellsberg to maximize the season is always a good bet. An interesting X factor is the offensive system the Heat installed last season from consultant Noah LaRoche that teaches a style that largely eliminates pick and rolls, a play James has thrived in for decades. The Minnesota Timberwolves. The Timberwolves are $4.4 million below the second apron hard cap and have only the $3.9 million veterans minimum exception to offer James. With Anthony Edwards and Rudy Gobert, the Wolves have elite perimeter play and rim protection. Edwards and James played together on the Olympic team, so there's familiarity between the two, and Jaden McDaniels would provide James cover by guarding opponents' top wing scorers. LaMelo Ball is a wild card. His style of play would test James's patience, but having James on the court with shooters such as Ball, Edwards, and Ayu Dosunmu provides what has always been a successful formula. One sweetener, James and coach Chris Finch are both big Ohio State fans. The 76ers. They split up their $15 million non-tax mid-level exception into Dean Wade and Anthony Simmons. They then used part of the $5.5 million biannual exception to sign Ariel Hukporti. As a result of the three signings, Philadelphia has only the $3.9 million veterans exception available. This is a star-laden roster that can balance and protect James a number of different ways. James was, somewhat unexpectedly at this stage of his career, dominant in transition last season and playing along with Tyrese Maxey and VJ Edgecombe leans into that. Wade and Jaylen Brown also will help protect him defensively. Joel Embiid, another 2024 Olympics teammate, will give him a big man scoring presence and formula he used to win a title with Anthony Davis in 2020. That the 76ers are dealing with a long drought, no title in 43 years, no finals or conference finals in 25 years, enhances the pathway for James to add to his legacy by helping them win at the highest level. I mean, that's plain and simple. There's a lot that's going on there with him. But now, Summer League. It's been a fun Summer League so far. Things got popped off last night for AJ DeBonta in his debut, his Summer League debut for the Washington Wizards against the number 2 pick Darren Peterson of the Utah Jazz. Though DeBonta and Peterson missed some shots, they are accustomed to making and win a combined 2 for 12 from three. They still had a duel that did not disappoint while displaying flashes of their exciting potential. DeBonta led all players with 27 points and 7 rebounds in 26 minutes to power Washington to a 92-88 win. Peterson finished with 24 points. Every time I play him, it's a great setting, DeBonta told ESPN afterward. He got the best of me 3 times, 2 in high school, 1 in college. I just wanted to come out on top, get a win first and foremost. DeBonta did not finish the game because of leg soreness, but said he is good and will play in the Wizards' next game Sunday against the Sacramento Kings. Both players were not shy to start the game. DeBonta missed his first shot on a driving attempt that was blocked, and Peterson missed his first shot, a pull-up 3, all in the first minute. But the 6'9" DeBonta flashed his tantalizing athleticism and length. He scored his first basket driving with his left hand before scoring with his right on an impressive reverse layup in traffic with 9:22 to go in the first quarter. Peterson's first basket was a 24-foot fadeaway 3. He displayed his ability to create his own shot a few times by sidestepping his way free of a defender, but missed a couple of these threes. He shot 6 for 18 for the game, but finished 5 of 7 missed 5 of 7 3-point attempts while also committing 8 turnovers. DeBonta balled out. DeBonta hit 7 of 18 shots, missed all 5 of his 3-pointers. He finished with 2 assists and said he felt he could have gotten more rebounds and assists. So, yeah. They weren't the only ones popping off in the Summer League, though. Looking at this Timberwolves-Pelicans game, Kobe Bufkin, former Michigan Wolverine, popped off for 30 points, 8 of 16 from the field, 6 of 9 from the free throw line in a game that the Minnesota Timberwolves won 105-92. I'm not sure who this is. Huh. Last name Pullen went for 24 and 12 assists with only 4 turnovers in 31 minutes for the Minnesota Timberwolves. But the game we all really want to talk about, well, there's a few. First, the Pistons Summer League got going. They did lose to the 76ers, 101-93. I. Jones had 22 points. Abeka Okori had 4 assists, 1 turnover. They shot 51-33, 75, 9 turnovers, 30 rebounds, but did not lead at all in this game. Jani Broom had 13 rebounds. LeBaron Filon Jr., 7 assists, 3 turnovers in 29 minutes. But come on, we know what game we want to talk about. It's the Warriors and the Mavericks. Jaxel Lannenborg versus Merez Johnson. Looking at the box score, the Warriors won 101-90. Jaxel, 21 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists, only 2 turnovers in the game. 8 of 13 from the field, 2 of 4 from the three-point line. Merez Johnson Jr., 27 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 turnovers, 3 steals, 2 blocks in this game. Went 12 of 17 from the field, 1 of 4 from 3, 2 for 2 from the free throw line. Jaxel, 2 for 4 from the free throw line. These are huge, huge matchups. Jaxel gets the best of it. They had some fun after the game as well. But that's all we got for now. When we come back, a more of a Michigan basketball update and some World Cup action as well with more Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket.
Carter Ostrous here for the Council for Responsible Energy. I want to share a few quick, simple, and inexpensive tips that will not only reduce your home's energy use, but will also save you money on your utility bills. As you switch from heating to cooling, why not opt for a new programmable thermostat that will virtually pay for itself? This is one of the easiest things you can do to really see some significant savings. You can save about $180 a year by properly setting a programmable thermostat. Weather stripping can also significantly lower your bills. You just peel the backing off and seal up any leaks in drafty doors and windows. It only takes a few minutes, but you definitely notice a difference in both the temperature in the house and also your bills. And my last tip, check your home's insulation. Proper insulation in your attic, ceilings, floors, crawl spaces, exterior and basement walls can save you 30% on home energy bills. It's a little bit more work for you, but your wallet will definitely thank you.
A message from the Council for Responsible Energy.
Mike Rowe on the skills gap and how a student organization known as Skills USA is trying to fill it.
So the thing about Skills USA that's so cool, and the reason that my foundation has supported it for years, is that it's deliberately and intentionally focused on celebrating a skill. 3 million jobs right now exist in the trades and transportation and commerce. The skills gap is real. Training kids and getting them excited to do the jobs that exist ought to be job one. Skills USA does that in a big way. It's about excellence and competition and being good at what you do, and eventually through all of that, learning who you are. Skills USA is working.
Learn more at microworks.com and skillsusa.org.
Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejan Hughes, and we are back to talk about Michigan basketball over in Ann Arbor. We got some updates here as their top five recruiting class appears to be staying intact. Incoming freshman forward Quinn Costello, a McDonald's All-American, announced on social media Thursday that he will play for the Wolverines this season under interim head coach Mike Boynton Jr. The four-star prospect out of the Newman School in Boston is the final member of Michigan's six-player recruiting class to reaffirm his commitment since Dusty May departed for the Dallas Mavericks last month. Costello is one of four top 100 prospects in Michigan's class, which is headlined by five-star guard Brandon McCoy Jr. According to the 247 Sports Composite, the 6'10" Costello is ranked number 32 overall and the number 6 power forward in the country for this class. Not only has Boynton kept Michigan's recruiting class in the fold, but 13 of the 14 players on the roster have chosen to stay in Ann Arbor. Junior guard LJ Kaysen is the only player yet to announce his intention for next season. He's also recovering from a torn ACL and is expected to miss most of the year. Although Michigan lost four starters from last year's national championship team, including the entire front court, Costello is expected to be in the mix for a prominent role. The Wolverines also brought in a trio of experienced front court players via the transfer portal: Tennessee's J.P. Estrella, Cincinnati's Mustafa Thiam, and LSU's Jalen Reed. Even though most Wolverines have announced their intentions to stay, a 15-day transfer portal will be open July 24th per the NCAA rules. More news coming out of Michigan. Michigan basketball has been able to keep its roster together after Dusty May left for the NBA's Dallas Mavericks. The coaching staff, on the other hand, is a little bit of a different story. Drew Williamson, the assistant coach who also served as Michigan's director of player development the past two seasons, has left the program. A program spokesperson told the news as of Thursday, Williamson was still listed as a member of Michigan's coaching staff on the team's website, but it appears that he has joined May's Mavericks staff. A video on social media before Dallas's first NBA Summer League game in Las Vegas showed Williamson in Mavericks gear throwing passes to former Michigan forward Mirez Johnson Jr., who was drafted by Dallas with the number 9 overall pick during a pregame shoot-around. Williamson has worked on May's staff the past 5 years at Florida Atlantic and Michigan. His departure is the third from Michigan's national championship coaching staff, along with May and former assistant coach Justin Joyner, who was hired as Oregon State's head coach. Williamson was set to receive a six-figure raise and a pay salary of $347,500 at Michigan this season, according to contract details obtained by the news via a Freedom of Information Act request. Last season, his salary was $247,500. He signed a new one-year deal on April 28th, almost 2 months before May's move to the NBA on June 22nd. According to the employment agreement, Williamson can end his employment before his contract expired on April 30th, 2027, by giving the university reasonable advance written notice, and all compensation will cease immediately upon termination. Williamson's exit leaves interim head coach Mike Boynton Jr. with at least two positions to fill, and it's unclear if any more Michigan staffers will follow May to the pros. Another person who reportedly is heading to Dallas to join May is Modi Moore, an international coach who seemed bound for Ann Arbor after holding head jobs in the Japanese B League and Australia's National Basketball League. Moore appeared set to replace Joyner on May's staff at Michigan and has been listed as men's basketball assistant coach in the university's athletic department staff directory since May. However, Moore's hiring was never formally announced by the program and no contract was signed, as no document has been provided to the news despite repeated FOIA requests. So Michigan has some moving going on, but it isn't with the roster. I'm sure LJ Kaysen will return. I don't see many teams maybe wanting to take him on, knowing that he's returning from an injury, but that doesn't mean the door isn't open and someone doesn't see the potential for him to boost their roster later on in the season when he does come back healthy from that ACL recovery. Now it's a little time to step onto the pitch and talk about some World Cup. Round of 16, it came and went. France took down Paraguay in full time. Morocco took down Canada 3-0 in full time. France won 1-0 over Paraguay. Spain beat Portugal 1-0 in full time. Norway beat Brazil 2-1 in full time. England beat Mexico 3-2 in full time. Argentina beat Egypt 3-2 in full time. Switzerland beats Colombia 4-3. Well, 0-0, but 4-3 in pens. And Belgium dominates USA 4-1 in full time. So, unfortunate ending to the World Cup for the host United States. But now we're in the thick of it in the round of 16. France already took down Morocco in the first game, 2-0. As I'm recording this, Spain and Belgium have not played, but you guys know how that went down. And I won't say a ton about the Norway and England game because that's going to be something that I'll be getting into later on for the picks, along with Argentina and Switzerland, as both of those games are 5 p.m. and 9 p.m. later today in their respective routes. Looking at the homepage, you know, there's some news out there. Pulisic was coming up with a little bit of an injury there. Haaland is not just Norway's talisman, but also the World Cup's biggest star. I mean, yeah, he's been all over the place in all kind of ranks. So the eight most important players of the quarterfinal: Michael Olise, the attacking midfielder for France. Morocco, the Morocco, Ashraf Hakimi, the fullback. Obviously, Erling Haaland, the center fielder for Norway. Jude Bellingham, the attacking midfielder for England. Lamine Yamal, the winger for Spain. Jeremy Doku, the winger for Belgium. Lisandro Martinez, the center back for Argentina. And Gregor Kobel, the goalkeeper for Switzerland. Ooh, they've given grades for every team that's been eliminated so far. Morocco got a B+ as they lost in the finals or the quarterfinals to France. Colombia got a C- for their loss to Switzerland in the round of 16. Egypt gets a B+ for their loss to Argentina in the round of 16. America gets a flat C for their loss to Belgium in the round of 16. I think we have to call it a wash, don't we? On one hand, the United States men's national team looked absolutely dominant against the average to bad teams. It played in the World Cup. It pressed smothered the likes of Paraguay, Australia, and Bosnia-Herzegovina. Their rotations between the midfielders and wingers and fullbacks constantly broke open space inside the penalty area, and its starting center forward turned all of the diamonds into quality shots. Heck, I think you can even give it bonus points for the loss against Turkey. Only one starter began that match, and the Americans basically played an even game against the most talented team in the group. Then, of course, the U.S. played in this first decent opponent in the tournament and completely fell apart. There are two important things to point out about the performance against Belgium beyond the score being 4-1. The first, this Belgium team isn't very good. In fact, once Florian Belonga had his suspension suspended, the betting bets made the U.S. national team a slight favorite to win this match. Belgium are currently 10th in the ELO ratings, 9th in the Kaylee ratings, and I had them 12th before the World Cup started. They need an own goal to tie with Egypt in their opener, and they were awful in the round of 32 against Senegal. Their best player, Jeremy Doku, played only final 30 minutes against the U.S. men's national team. Their second best player, Kevin De Bruyne, didn't play at all. The second, this was worse than anything we've seen in this stage in a long time. Belgium utterly dominated the Americans in every phase of the game from start to finish. The 2022 loss to the Netherlands at least saw the U.S. men's national team outshoot and outpossess its opponent. The same is true in the round of 16 defeats against Ghana in 2010 and Germany in 2002. Those were all games decided largely by the randomness of the ball going into the goal, not any kind of systematic dominance applied to the Americans. The only comparable loss in terms of one team just looking so much better at the sport of soccer than the other was the 2014 loss to Belgium, when Tim Howard made a ton of saves to keep the game alive into extra time. But well, the game wasn't a home game for the Americans, and it was back when all the Belgium stars were in their primes. Eden Hazard is retired now. De Bruyne and Romelu Lukaku are almost there. 12 years later, Belgium has gone backwards, and for at least a night, it certainly looked like the same thing is true for the U.S. men's national team. And that is all we got for now. We'll be back after the break with our picks here on Mid Madness on 95.3 The Ticket. Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes, and it's time to get into my favorite part of the show. We are getting into the picks, and you have an opportunity to play along with us. Every single week, there are six matchups, matches, contests, games, whatever it may be, going down on the list. And I tell you who I think is going to win and why I am right, do all kinds of deliberation and research, and share all the ball knowledge I have to tell you why my picks are going to be perfect. And then you have an opportunity to do the same thing yourself. Jump into the 95.3 The Ticket app, hit that chat feature, and submit your picks. After you do your own deliberation and research, after listening to me babble about it for 12 minutes and decide who I think is going to win, you can say why I'm going to be wrong or why you agree with me. And then, of course, if you happen to do picks better than I do and you prove you know ball better than I do, we can get you something special. But you got to submit those picks to the 95.3 The Ticket app for us to be able to hook you up with something special. But the opportunity is there. Jacob, when he was here, couldn't take advantage of it. So hopefully one of you can out there and you can get your boy something nice. But yeah, this is always a fun part of the show. Last week, not so fun for me. 2-4 for me last week. Morocco coming through, taking down Canada. The Wings taking down the tempo. But USA lost to Belgium. Mexico lost to England. The Aces lost to the Fever as well as the Dream losing to the Valkyries. So it was a tough week for me, not only in the WNBA, but also in the World Cup, which is exactly back where we'll be this weekend as well. Is back into the WNBA. That's where we'll start. The New York Liberty taking on the Minnesota Lynx, 1 p.m. on ABC. The Liberty are 13-9, 6-4 on the year. The Lynx are 16-6. They're 6-4 at home on the year. Liberty are 6-4 on the road. That is 1.5-point favorites are the Lynx, -155 in the money line, +130 for the Liberty. 172.5 on the over-under, 53% for the Lynx, 47% for the Liberty. This will be at Target Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Satu Sabali is out with a possible concussion. Rebecca Allen out with a nose injury. Leona Fibich out with a foot injury, all possible to return for this game. Olivia Miles out with a calf injury, possible to return. Nafisa Collier is expected to return from her ankle injury soon. For the Lynx, Lynx are scoring at a high rate. They're 3-2 in their last five. They have wins over the Mystics, the Wings, and the Sun, but they also have losses to the Liberty and Sun. Meanwhile, Liberty are 2-3 in their last five. They have losses to the Storm, Valkyries, and Wings, but wins over the Aces and the Lynx. So it looks like Liberty like to show up against the big-time matchups, and I'm a little concerned. Obviously, Nafisa Collier, the best player on this Lynx team, has not played at all yet this season, and Olivia Miles, their first-round draft pick, and the best player on the team as of right now, is not playing, leaving Natasha Howard and company to battle against Breonna Stewart, Jonquel Jones, Pauline Astier, and company by herself, essentially. That's going to be tough, especially when you look back at Olivia Miles playing in the first matchup against the New York Liberty back on July 3rd. And the Liberty won that one in New York, 99-86. It's hard for me to take the Lynx knowing that they may or may not get back their best player. Olivia Miles does make this a very winnable game for the Lynx, but I'm going to have to go with the Liberty this time around, which now is going to move us over to the Fever or Fire and Dream, which is later today, 4 p.m. CBS and Paramount Plus. The Portland Fire are 9-13, 3-7 on the road. Atlanta Dream are 13-9, 7-3 at home. 13.9% chance for the Fire, 86.1% chance for Atlanta. 11.5-point favorites are the Dream, -600. On the money line, +440 for the Fires, 172.5 sitting on that over-under. They played back on May 29th, Atlanta Dream over the Fire, 86-66. Ryan Howard, Angel Reese, Jordan Canada going to look to continue their dominance against Carla Leite, Emily Engstler, and company. The Dream do have some injuries that don't seem to be of major concern, but they are only 1-4, each of these teams in their last five. A lot of struggles for both of them, which is why I decided to go with this game. It is a lot more even than kind of the metrics are throwing out. The Dream have lost two games to the Valkyries, a game to the Storm and the Mystics, but they did beat the Storm in their most recent matchup. So they're 1-5. For the Portland Fire, they beat the Storm in their most recent matchup as well. They have losses to the Sky twice, the Mystics, and the Aces. With all of that being said, as much as I think this game is going to be closer and the Fire kind of have a chance, I'm going with the Atlanta Dream. I think they just have too much in a moment where the Portland Fire don't have nearly enough. And with two teams struggling, getting back in the winning column is huge. It could be a two-game winning streak for the Dream, which can really boost their confidence heading forward. Coming up on Sunday, the Indiana Fever, 13-9, 5-5 on the road, playing the Vegas Aces, 16-6, 6-4 at home. This game will be on NBC and Peacock, 9 p.m. Sunday night. 41.9% chance for the Fever, 58.1% chance for the Aces. Michelob Ultra Arena in Vegas. Fever did win the first game in Vegas, 7-5, or back on July 5th, 84-68. Obviously, Aja Wilson did not play in that game. Caitlin Clark did not play in that game. She's expected to possibly be back from her back injury. Aja Wilson is back from her injury to help out Chelsea Gray and company. Kelsey Mitchell, Aaliyah Boston and company will look to take care of business for the Fever. Fever are 3-2 in their last five, and so are the Aces. For the Fever, they have wins over the Sparks, Aces, and Mercury, but they also have losses to the Sparks and Mercury. The Aces have wins over Chicago twice in the Portland Fire, and they have losses to the Liberty and Fever. And honestly, I think you know where I'm going with this one. Caitlin Clark might not be playing, which is, in my opinion, a good thing for the Fever. Don't attack me, but the Fever play well when she's not on the floor. They rotate the ball around more. People feel more confident. There's more action in the game, and they aren't losing a ton of games when she's not playing. They just beat the Aces the other night. I think that they can do it again. But I'm going to go with the Aces because Aja Wilson's back, and that makes this a totally different ball game. I got the Aces taking down the Fever, which is the last game that is coming up in the WNBA. The Washington Mystics are 10-10. They're 6-5 on the road. The Toronto Tempo are 9-12. They're 5-6 at home. This game will be Tuesday, July 14th, 7 p.m. It will be in Toronto at the Coca-Cola Coliseum. 41.2% chance for the Mystics and a 58.8% chance for the Toronto Temple. This is a 2-0 series in favor of the Mystics. They won 68-65 back on May 8th and then 86-85 on June 12th. And there's some significant injuries going around here. Sonia Citron, early draft pick for the Mystics, expected to come back from a knee injury for this game. Naira Sabali is a game-time decision with a knee injury. Kiki Rice still out along with Brittany Sykes, both expected to possibly be back for this game as well. Both these teams struggling in their last five games. The Tempo, you see it there. They're 1-4 in their last five. They have a win over the Sparks, losses to the Dream, Phoenix, or Mercury, Wings, and Valkyries. For the Mystics, they're 3-2, or 2-3. They have two wins. One over Atlanta, one over the Portland Fire. Then they have losses to the Valkyries, the Sun, and the Lynx. This one is a little bit more difficult to call with the injuries sitting there. Marina Mabry back in action. Georgia Amor back in action for their respective teams. But with the 2-0 lead and just the level of play recently from the Mystics, it has me leaning toward taking Washington. So that is what I will do, which gets us over onto the pitch for our last two matches of the pick segment. Norway will be taking on England later today. It will be on Fox, Fox One, Telemundo, Fubo, Hard Rock Stadium in Miami Gardens, Florida. Looking here, plus 300 on the money line for Norway, negative 110 for England, plus 265 for the draw that leads to penalties. A half goal spread for England. 2.5 sits on the over under. The last two matchups for these two were friendlies. One was on September 3rd in 2014. The other was May 26th in 2012. And England won both of those 1-0. One was in Norway, one was in England. Big matchup here. I mean, Haaland versus Kane. That's the big one here. Everybody's looking at the big names. And in the last five matchups, Norway, almost pure dominance, beat Iraq 4-1, beat Senegal 3-2, lost to France 4-1, beat Ivory Coast 2-1, and then beat Brazil 2-1. England, on the other hand, is four wins and a draw. They have a draw against Ghana 0-0, but then they beat Croatia 4-2, beat Panama 2-0, beat Dominican of Congo 2-1, and then beat Mexico 3-2. So England going to look to build on top of that and try and come out with a victory here. But I'm going all vibes here. Erling Haaland has been the face, essentially, of the World Cup. He's an absolute star, and I don't want to see England win, if I'm being honest. So I'm going with Norway simply for Erling Haaland and being a hater. And then the last matchup of the week, Argentina versus Switzerland. Messi going to be back out there doing his thing. 9 p.m. later today, Fox, Fox One, Telemundo, Fubo at the Gayha Field at Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City, Missouri. negative 145 on the money line for Argentina, plus 450 for Switzerland, plus 255 for a draw to pens. Half goal spread for Argentina, 2.5 on the over under. The last four matchups between these two, Argentina is 3-1. They won back in 2014, 1-0. They won back in 2012, 3-1. They tied, and or they drew 1-1 in 07, and then back in 66 at the World Cup in England, Argentina won 2-0. I'm going with Argentina here as well. They're 5-0 in their last five matches. I mean, Switzerland is 4-0, so it's going to be close, but I'm going with all vibes here. Argentina as well. That gives me Liberty, Aces, Norway, Argentina, Dream, and Mystics. Enjoy the Tigers coverage this weekend. Enjoy all of the sports. And we'll be back next week with more Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket.
Join Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app. Sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.